For copyright reasons, the producers of Taking Hugh for Granted would like to state that this podcast is in no way associated with the actor Hugh John Mungo Grant, nor does it endorse his views or represent him in any way. We simply review Mr. Grant's films and hope to shine light upon some of the lesser-known classics from his illustrious career. Hugh, if you're listening, we hope you approve.
Listen, I did film and television studies at university for 3 years. I spent hours reading countless books and articles on subjects spanning from film all the way to television. Not a single one mentioned Hugh Grant once.
I achieved the hardest qualification across any university or college ever, a 2-1 in history. Let me tell you, the only thing that I learned was that we, as a society, have a history of denying and neglecting Hugh Grant's artistic and cultural relevance, not just in this country, but in the entire world.
I met Oscar at a Hugh Grant-themed event I put on at the Students' Union.
It felt as though Digory and I were the only ones there, and we agreed that there was a Hugh Grant-shaped hole in academia.
We decided to put it right ourselves. We want to show people that he's an icon in acting.
We want to show people he's more than just a bumbling posh guy.
I'm Digory Waite.
And I'm Oscar Beardmore Gray.
And this is...
Taking Hugh for Granted.
Hello there, you're listening to Taking Hugh for Granted, the only podcast on the internet revolving around Hugh Grant, I believe. I am joined by my good friend Oscar Beardmore Gray. Oscar, say hello.
Hi everyone. A very special Christmas episode of Taking Hugh for Granted. And for the first time recording this podcast, Digory and I are sitting face to face.
Face to face. I mean, do people, I don't think, some people don't realise that you live in Canada and I live in London,
no,
in the UK.
No, I mean, it shows that these days it really doesn't matter the distance. Mm. I actually live in Vancouver, Canada, which is a good 9-hour flight from London.
Mm.
But I would like to, I mean, I think the episodes have been pretty seamless
yeah.
in terms of editing, but it is really, really great to be back. And we are currently in Highbury, North London.
Indeed. We're sat here in a high-rise flat, looking out in our big studio, i.e. my kitchen.
Great. Yeah, it's a fantastic studio here. We're only a stone's throw away from the Emirates Stadium.
Yeah.
Digory's favourite football team.
Indeed.
A happy hunting ground for most Premier League teams at the moment.
Shut up. So, how's it been back in England? We've done that. Also, just so they know as well, I'm really happy with that we've done this because we were at a festival. We said, let's do this thing when we were, you know, it was late in the evening. We were chatting rubbish and we were like, let's make a podcast together.
And we were chatting absolute rubbish
yeah,
at that point.
And then you flew back to Canada and we've just been emailing. We've been messaging, instant messaging. Set up Google Drive, sent things over and we've done it all remotely, which is actually pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Definitely. And like we said in the last episode, very happy with the response of people.
Mm.
It's had hundreds of thousands of emails,
yeah.
hundreds of thousands of plays.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for you at home listening, you know, it wouldn't be the same. And it's from the very bottom of my heart.
Absolutely. So, Oscar, how is it being back? It's almost Christmas. It's the Christmas episode.
Yeah. It's been good. It's actually weird now that I've lived in Canada for like 2.5 years because there are quite distinct. Suddenly, I'm like, there are things where you're like, okay, I'm back, and you have to just like sort of flick your brain. For example, today coming up on the tube to your house, there are a bunch of loutish Tottenham fans on the tube, chanting "Who let the dogs out?" at a random dog in the other carriage, and you're just like, okay, this wouldn't happen in Canada. People don't behave antisocially.
Mm.
Also, in Vancouver. It's actually really nice. And when I first went there, I was like, this is a bit wet. But everyone thanks the bus drivers there.
And oh, really? Everyone is a
get-off. Everyone, if you don't do it, everyone's like looking at you being like, mate.
Oh, wow.
You gotta thank. So when you get off the bus, it's like, thank you. If you're in your, thanks.
And then you come in like, cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, cheers, son.
When all the Irish people turn up there, you can just like see them like, actually, I'm not going to try an Irish accent. But anyway.
I can't do it either.
It is a little strange when you're here because no one thanks the bus drivers, and that's fine, that's normal. But actually, you know what? Christmas, it's quite nice to just say thanks.
Thank the bus driver. But the problem with that, though, is that half the buses, especially in London, is you don't get off at the front.
That is true.
So get off half. So like you have to be like, as you're getting off, like, but cheers, mate.
But that is, in Vancouver, you get off the back as well. People are just that keen to say thank you.
They shout to the front.
They shout.
Oh.
And they holler. They holler.
Wow. Oh, they holler. Classic, of course. It's very North American.
So, I'd like to bring that culture back here, but it wouldn't be very London.
No, it wouldn't be very London at all.
You can't thank people.
The best thing I think that we can do is you walk off where you usually do, walk to the front and give them a big thumbs up and like a raised eyebrow, like, yeah.
A little wink.
Yeah.
Cheers, geese.
Cheers, geezer. Yeah, cheers, mate. Big slap the bus and off it goes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's what we want. What are we talking about?
I don't know what we're talking about. I don't know how we go into that. But we were going to talk about our Christmas Day rituals, considering this is a Christmas episode.
Yes.
What do you do on Christmas Day, Diggs?
I mean, things have changed a little bit now. You know, people are getting older. I'm the youngest of four. I'm 23. We're all two years apart. But back in the day, Christmas was great. The night beforehand, obviously, you get mince pie, you get a carrot, you lay it out for Father Christmas, you hang up your stocking somewhere.
Was it red wine for Father Christmas?
He was on stronger stuff. I think I don't think he was on red wine. I think we pulled him out some brandy or whiskey or something. Yeah, he was on. I mean, that's
heavy stuff.
Exactly. I just love the idea of Santa going round, and because he's magic, it's fine. He doesn't get that pissed, but he is absolutely hammered by the time he gets round. And then obviously, so in the morning you wake up and at the bottom of your bed is your stocking filled, and you think, how'd it happen? So then you take your stocking and you run into mum and dad's room, you jump on their bed, and then everyone opens all their stockings together and it's wonderful. Then you have to have breakfast, you have to have a shower, you have to get dressed because you can't be spending the entire day in your pajamas. And then you go to the big tree, and under there are presents for everyone, and then you all open them together. And then we used to go on a little walk in the middle of the day. And weirdly, do you have Christmas lunch?
We normally go around 3 p.m.
Right.
It's kind of like what's the equivalent of like brunch, but in the afternoon, that kind of thing.
I have no idea. Yeah, is there not a
lunch
dinner? Lunchner. Yeah, what? Yeah. Well, that's a classic, but what we do, and this is mental, we have Chinese takeaway party food for lunch. So we're talking like samosa. Well,
mate, that's hilarious.
It's so rogue, but like it's lovely. And you have like little prawn things and all that
stuff. It's similar to, was I talking to you about it? So in Japan, it's KFC. Did you know that? No, I was talking with some other friends. So in Japan, they make something like a quarter of their yearly income, KFC, on Christmas Day, because it's a tradition to go to KFC on Christmas Day.
That is the best marketing. KFC they absolutely smashed it. So everyone just gets a KFC.
Gets KFC. I mean, you can't imagine everyone in Japan sitting around with a big roast dinner.
No.
So KFC it is.
I would absolutely love that. That is a great tradition.
Also, shout out to one of my mates, Reese Weaver, who has 50-year subscription to 50 years of free KFC.
How?
Because he won a competition about 5 years ago where he was in a video for KFC being rugby tackled by a load of rugby players, and as a result he won 50 years free KFC.
That's incredible. That is so amazing. Have you ever been with him and got some for free?
Maybe. I feel like probably on a drunken night out.
That is so amazing.
I don't really get KFC sober.
No,
you do.
Well,
you used to.
I used to. Did I? Because I was such a late comer to KFC that I'd only really get it when I was drunk. And unfortunately, now I'm a vegetarian. I don't really get it anymore. Mm. Actually, yeah, the last time I had one was in France. Anyway, this is what we're talking about.
KFC.
Yeah, but then we have our Christmas dinner actually at night, which I think is quite nice. But then you are just absolutely.
But then you're probably like, I feel like if you have your Christmas dinner late, then that's actually good because you can drink normally. Whereas if you have it at 3 p.m., you're already quite drunk about 5, 6 p.m. But that means you probably go to bed quite early because you just can't hack it.
Yeah.
Do the washing up and you're like,
bedtime. Yeah, yeah, it's time to go. What? I'm going to ask you two questions here, and hopefully, one, what time do you get up in the morning on Christmas Day? / tell me your story. But please include that detail.
Okay. I get up these, I mean, back in the day, it's like you can't sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a sort of 6, 7 a.m. wake up. So I have a younger brother who is 8 years younger than me. So actually, until quite recently, it was still quite an early kickoff because he was up at like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
ready to go. And I'm like, have to drag myself out of bed. Now, fortunately, you know, teenager, he's the one getting up at 11 a.m. in the morning.
Nice.
So I reckon it's about an 8:30 rise for a 9 o'clock open, probably.
Brilliant stuff. For another, so doors at 8:30, things kick off around nine.
Yeah, you know, the band come on at they probably come on.
The warm up act is dad like coming out of the shower like, all right, at like 8:45.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
the actual main event is 9 o'clock.
You gotta be in your pajamas when you open presents.
The stockings, yeah. But then, like, the presents under the tree.
We put our stockings downstairs. We don't put them by our beds. So ours are, like, by the fireplace.
Yeah.
And then the tree's there. But we normally wait until after lunch for the trees. Tree presents. Often.
Yeah. I think that's wise.
But everyone's got something a little different.
Exactly. We have to wait till after breakfast. That's as long as we can wait. But yeah, I love that. I love learning about people's Christmas days. Are there any other flourishes in there? Is there any like Christmas Eve traditions?
We've been to the same carol singing at someone else's house for the last about literally probably 16 years in a row. And this will be the first year we're not going because we're going to be away for Christmas.
Where are you going?
We're going to Cornwall. Very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, fun. It's still kind of fun because otherwise Christmases sometimes do blur into one.
They do. I literally can't remember like the last 5 Christmases of what you've done.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, last year we went to... Yeah, I don't...
I remember 2 Christmases ago I wore an elf costume all day and made the best video I've ever made in my entire life, which is just me just like filming people across the way who were wearing Christmas hats and being like, look at them, they look like idiots. And I turn the camera around and I'm wearing an entire elf costume.
That's
with
class, mate.
Curly shoes and everything. But last year I wore it and it... I don't know what happened. Firstly, the fabric was so thin that the whole bum area wore out just from sitting down on it. So
just
like,
one day.
Yeah. So my last year, my bum was hanging out all Christmas Day. But also, I don't know what happened. The fabric gave me a headache. I got rashes from it. So I was a very unhappy elf on Christmas Day. Very unhappy.
Mate, that is awful. Getting an allergic reaction to an elf costume.
It was
on Christmas.
Bizarre. Exactly. Okay. That's not very Christmassy.
No.
Oh, it was terrible.
Are you a Christmas jumper, man?
I was, and now I'm not anymore. This is the coolest thing I've done for quite some time. I had a Christmas party recently. I ordered, and they said the theme was Christmas. So I ordered a Christmas jumper, a Christmas turtleneck. Thought that'd be perfect. Unfortunately, I didn't really look at it.
Very apt for this today's episode, Degree.
Indeed.
On the turtleneck front.
And I got it from ASOS. Shout out to ASOS. And so it arrived quickly and shit. And then, but it had a snowboarder on it. And I didn't think, but look at that. And everyone's been like, that's really lame. No one at the party, like one other person was wearing something Christmassy. So there was no point in me buying it. But I returned it. I returned it the next day. Is that bad? I used it. I wore it. And then I sent it back.
I think
got
it's
full
okay
refund.
To wear something once and return it. As long as you haven't spilled your bloody Christmas dinner over it.
No. I mean, I spilled somebody else's, so it's fine. But but yeah. No, that was fantastic. Anyway,
we should probably talk about the actual film we're reviewing today.
Yeah. Just as well, this is a podcast in which me and Oscar review every Hugh Grant film ever made and ask the simple question, are we taking Hugh for granted? Today's film is Love Actually.
Love Actually, I mean, where to start? So I'll give you a short synopsis if you haven't seen the film, but this film is a Christmas classic now. It really is. So anyway, here we go. 9 intertwined stories examine the complexities of one emotion that connects us all, love.
Nice.
Among the characters explored are David, Hugh Grant.
Wait, hey.
The handsome newly elected British Prime Minister who falls for a younger staffer, Natalie. Sarah, a graphic designer whose devotion to her mentally ill brother complicates her love life, and Harry, Alan Rickman, a married man, is tempted by his attractive new secretary. Mm. That is the sort of short synopsis I have.
Mm.
But I guess doesn't tell the whole story.
No, not at all.
But should we just dive in straight into Hugh?
Yes.
I think that's probably, I mean, given this is taking Hugh for granted, I know in previous episodes we've, and we will analyze the film from afar, but let's just dive straight in there to our boy.
Because perfectly, the film opens with, you know, shots of people at the, it's quite nice actually, it is sweet, of people seeing each other at the airport and hugging, and that's all real. So they spent like 5 days filming at some like Heathrow Airport or something, and filming people hugging from the, when they, and you know, kissing and stuff when they see each other for ages, and then they went up to them afterwards and said, "Hey, we've just filmed you. Do you mind if we put you in the film?" Which I think is really cool. And then you hear Hugh Grant's voice. So we first are introduced to him straight away.
Mm.
So our first, any thoughts on?
Well, I mean, it's actually, I'd say it's quite an iconic line now. He said, you know, when the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from the people on board were messages of hate or revenge. They were all messages of love. If you look for it, I got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
Perfectly.
It's a nice line, but actually, I was reading a lot of reviews from the actual time that really hate on this line, because this was a 2003 film, so it's only 2 years past 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think there was a New York Times review I was reading that was just like, this is a really insensitive line about the Twin Towers, 9/11. But I guess it sort of goes along with the film in general, that it's got better through the years when people sort of forget the context of when it was made, I think. So
Yeah, it was a little bit jarring. I think now, though, obviously, like, I think that, like you say, is fine. But in 2003, a bit soon, mate.
Yeah.
Jeez. Does get the point across, and it is right. So then, Hugh Grant as a character. I can't remember. So he is the Prime Minister. He's just come into office. Thoughts?
I really like him in this film in general. Yep. So the first scene I think we see him is the car comes up and then he gets out of the car and he's got his prime ministerial actions on point.
Mm.
He sort of buttons his jacket up as he gets out the car and he sort of does a little head nod to the journos and then he's got his one hand wave. Then he walks up the steps and he's got his two hand wave.
Yeah.
And does another little head nod.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the film came out in 2003, so this is a bit of a play on Tony Blair. And you can imagine him as prime. I mean, do you think he's prime ministerial?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. And he feels very Tony Blair, the whole thing, which makes sense because obviously.
Almost the haircut and the dark suit, that was very.
And the way that he carries himself, it's bizarre because it feels. Maybe it just feels so much like Tony Blair, but maybe it's because they're both tall and suave. Was Tony Blair wasn't fucking suave, but he was there. He was hot.
He makes
at the
Boris
time.
Johnson like a better geez. Boris Johnson. He's suave.
Jesus Christ, yeah, yeah. So
and then he walks through the door,
and
this is probably the first moment. It's his first interaction in the film with Natalie. What did you make of that?
You know, I always say this, like, with films like, with rom-coms and stuff, I always say, I have to fall in love with them. And Hugh Grant's character in this and the Prime Minister, like, obviously it's Hugh Grant, he's endlessly lovable. But in that first moment and their first meeting where, well, she makes a little fuck up or whatever, and, you know, and it's so sweet and I fell in love with her straight away. So, I loved it.
And this is Natalie. She's new, like you.
Hello, Natalie.
Hello, David. I mean, sir. Shit, I can't believe I've just said that. And now I've gone and said shit. Twice. I'm so sorry, sir.
It's fine. You could have said fuck and then we'd have been in real trouble.
Thank you, sir. I did have an awful premonition I was going to fuck up on my first day. Oh, piss it.
Actually, the Hugh and Natalie love story. Is the best love story probably? It's maybe my favorite in this film.
Yeah,
because I mean, this film is just oh god, it pisses me off. Yeah, I don't know. Mate. Yeah. I know. I'm saying it to all those fans at home who are always like, oh, Love Actually is on. What a great Christmas film.
No. No.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. I mean,
I knew we were going to descend into this, but yeah. I don't know how quickly.
No, I think maybe it's apt to now. I mean, the film. So I like maybe four. No, so that is what you're saying. There's nine storylines.
Well, I
four of them. So actually, that's not too bad.
Well, we have I think the nine. If this is correct, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, eight. Okay, well, I don't know how many there are, but we have Billy Mack, Bill Nighy, and Joe.
Yeah.
That's a good storyline.
Then
we have Juliet, Mark, and Peter, which is Keira Knightley, and then her husband and the mate, who is, we can talk about that in a bit. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Then we have Colin Firth and the Portuguese girl.
Don't believe it for a second.
So rogue. Really, completely out there.
That was going to be a whole film in itself, by the way. Apparently. And then Richard Curtis was like, oh, maybe I'll put it in this. It's like, imagine
it,
that.
It didn't make much sense.
It was so boring. I didn't fall in love with either of them.
Yeah, and the version of the film I was watching the other day didn't have the Portuguese subtitles, so I didn't even know what they were saying.
It's on. Do you not have Amazon Prime?
Mate, no.
No, fine. I mean, yeah, I was very lucky.
Of course you have Amazon Prime, you little
dick. Yeah, I know. I bought it for my dad for his birthday last year. I was like, yeah, get a year of Prime, but really I just bought it for myself.
Fair. That's what we all do.
Yeah.
And then there is Harry, Karen, and Mia. So that's Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson.
Horrid.
Obviously well known to be one of the most horrible Christmas stories ever.
Yeah.
David and Natalie, Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Then Daniel and Sam, which is Liam Neeson and what's his face?
The most...
Thomas Sangster.
Yeah, the best... I love
that. Do you
that.
Like that?
I mean, I think, to be honest, most of the stories are problematic in some way. I just think I love it. I think it's so sweet. It's
like
the one
Liam.
Thing.
I like Liam Neeson. I have a thing against.
Oh my God, Featherboy, or whatever the shit is called. I don't know what it is. For some reason, I hate the guy. I hate him. Yeah.
I feel bad for slagging off like a 6 year old boy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about his
You know what got me, though?
What?
You know, the reason I don't like him is because I don't like him in Nanny McPhee.
Right.
Have you watched Nanny McPhee?
No.
Great film, mate.
Really?
I wish Hugh Grant was in that, because Colin Firth is in that, and you could see Hugh Grant replacing Colin Firth in that film.
And doing a real business.
And then we would have been reviewing that.
Yeah.
Because Emma Thompson is Nanny McPhee, and she's got like
the tooth and yeah.
Because I thought for like the first, until I knew who Emma Thompson was, I thought Emma Thompson was like really ugly.
Because she's Nanny McPhee.
But actually she's quite nice looking.
Yeah.
And then the final story is, of course, maybe the sort of most stupid story of the lot, which is Colin, Tony, and the American Girls.
That is funny though. I loved that. I have to say, I loved that. So his big plan is he's going to go to America, and all the girls are going to hear his English accent, and then they're going to want to bang him. And he goes to America, and he meets four girls.
Stacey and the others. I can't remember what they're called.
Yeah, who all love his accent, and they invite him back to stay at their house, but they all have to share a bed because they don't have much money, and they all it gets really hot, so they all have to take their clothes off. And so
it doesn't sound like a bad deal he's got going. No, to be fair,
I love that. But also you are missing, I think, one more, which is Stacey from Gavin and Stacey, and Martin Freeman, which is actually, that's a great storyline.
That might be the best one. And also it's great now because everyone's watched that Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's Stacey. Yeah. Especially now this Christmas, we have the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special coming
out. Can't wait. Yeah.
That is honestly, I think that's like the most, it's being advertised everywhere.
Really?
I've seen, Ruth Jones and Stacey have been on the one show.
Oh, really?
Every radio, it's like they're
everywhere.
Wow,
they're really pushing it.
I've
heard it's amazing.
So anyway, so it is quite classic as well, because it's just... like Martin, it's just so Martin Freeman,
and it's so almost Stacey's character. The bit when the most amazing bit is when he walks her home and they kiss, and she goes, all I want for Christmas is you, or something, something like that, and then walks inside, and it's the most lame and bizarre thing to say, but somehow it's so great when she says it. It's Stacey.
You can imagine her saying that to Gab.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gavin, you're the only one I want for Christmas.
You're well lashed. Yeah, that's
you're
it.
Well
yeah. I love that storyline so much. But they get hardly any time. Yeah.
And we see her knockers as well.
We do. Yeah, a lot of people get their kit off in this film. Mm. There's also that storyline with the woman. Oh no, we talked about that.
I left out what's his face? Is the girl at work and the guy she's in love with, yeah. And then she doesn't say anything, and then they go to bed and her brother rings and he's like, oh, I had it in the synopsis.
Yeah, and it has serious
Sarah.
Mental health issues, yeah.
I didn't like that one.
I didn't like that one. Didn't fall in love with her, didn't fall in love with the guy, even though the guy's got a cracking bod. When he gets his kit off, I was like, mate, fair play. That is amazing. Hey,
she's punching, I think.
Yeah, although I don't think. Maybe. But then it's like, yeah, the whole. It's just that film where like that. Why have you got that bit with like her brother who's sectioned and stuff? It's just like.
I thought this was meant to be a fun film. What was your thinking in this like Christmassy film?
Yeah.
To put in like a really disturbing plot line that's not even in the film. It was unnecessary.
Yeah. I just don't know what the takeaway is from it. I don't mind having it, but like the film just is. It's like some good stories, some bad stories, but almost everyone comes out looking like they're a dickhead.
Mm.
And I find it deeply. The thing is, you can't go into it. Like the problem is, what do you think about this? I feel like by saying that, I'm being like, oh, I want every storyline to be great and like all rainbows and stuff. And I'm worried that maybe that is true, but
I do.
Yeah, maybe you do.
Okay, so let me read you this very good review that I think it is absolutely bang on. It says, Love Actually is exceptional in that it is not merely like so many other entries in this genre, unromantic. So basically he's saying romantic comedies are unromantic. He says, rather, it is emphatically, almost shockingly anti-romantic.
Mm. That's, yeah, it is.
It is, I'd say.
It is. And you know what? It's a classic Richard Curtis thing of him being obsessed with shagging. Everyone says, oh, you're not going to shag if you don't do that, or blah, blah. And like, everyone's just obsessed with how they look to the opposite sex. And it's just, romance.
Anyway, I mean, that wasn't very Christmassy. Maybe we should go back to Hugh.
Yes, let's.
On the first day of Grantmas, my true love sent to me a Hugh Grant on my telly. 12 Brexit protests, 11 trolls on Twitter, 10 awkward stutters, 9 PMs dancing, 8 dodgy girlfriends, 7 curtain hairstyles, 6 tabloid hackings, 5 timeless films, 4 silly smiles, 3 posh words, 2 charming laughs, and a Hugh Grant on your telly.
So, Hugh Grant, back to Hugh Grant. The best bit for me in the film, his best bit is this is the showstopper bit everyone talks about anyway, is the dance. Hugh Grant said that the dance was a black cloud over the entire production for him. Like in the week leading up to it, he said, oh, you know, I've got a gammy foot, so we can't rehearse it. And he hated it. His one of his issues with it was, firstly, he just thought, why is he dancing? But one of his issues was, he was like, where's the music coming from? Because the music's coming from the radio. And then because he's dancing around the whole of number 10, his issue was like, where's the music coming from? It's not very, you know, the radio wouldn't follow him around. And I just find that bizarre that that's his issue with it. It's like, you've seen films. You realize that you don't have to, like, music can be happening in the background and it doesn't need to come from somewhere. And it just abruptly stops when the woman sees him. That's what he had an issue with. Which I was like, that's bizarre.
That sounds like a very Hugh Grant thing to take issue with.
Yeah, exactly. Which is so bizarre. And then obviously he was also like at 7 a.m. in front of a grumpy crew with no in, you know, no pints down me at all. I had to do this dance.
I'd like to say he does a pretty good job.
He smashes it. Mm. He absolutely smashes it. The bit when it's filming through the doorway and he's doing like the sideways, like crab sort of move.
It's a crab move.
Yeah.
People should bring that crab move back to dance floors.
Amazing. It's amazing. It's like an Irish crab doing a jig.
Maybe we should, you know, because there's all those moves that have got nicknames, like the shopping trolley or the...
Yeah, yeah. The sprinkler.
And stuff like that. We should, if only we were in our university days still, Diggs, we could bring back the Hugh Grant.
Yeah, the Hugh Grant.
Like, have you done the Hugh Grant before?
Yeah.
And then bring out the little crab shuffle.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so great.
The point finger,
yeah, which is sprinkler-esque.
Maybe that's, you know, where the people who got the sprinkler from.
Yeah, they just did the round the world.
What's the line where he's like, ah, na, 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 oh, baby.
Yeah, I can't remember the line.
I'll take you there.
I'll take you there. I was speaking to someone last night who said that if they were to host a festival, they'd want the Pointer Sisters to headline.
Do they have any? I don't think they have any other songs, do
nope.
they?
Not that I've heard of.
I mean, to be fair, you'd probably be able to get them down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we'll try and get them up. Absolutely. How old are they?
Exactly. Yeah,
I didn't know it did.
It'd actually pop off though for that song. Get Hugh Grant to come to the festival.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Well,
you did
Crouch Fest, so can't you do Grant Fest?
Yeah, I could. I could. Oh, this is what we want. This is the ultimate cue. Get in touch. We have the email. Just get in touch. Let's make this happen. We want Grant Fest.
We're not stealing the Peter Crouch, the Peter Crouch podcast.
No
idea, but Grant.
But Hugh Grant could definitely fill a 3,000 seater stadium, like we did.
Oh,
with the Grant.
100%.
Yeah, whatever it was. I got a text the other day from my friend saying that they spotted Hugh Grant in the Spaghetti House, and they sent me the location. And I thought, am I going to do this? Am I going to do this? I could do this.
Our man hasn't made too many friends over the last couple of weeks with his election political. He's become a political guru.
Indeed. Yeah.
But maybe we'll save that for Hugh's news.
Yeah, Hugh's news coming
up. By the way, folks out there, we might be bringing special episodes to you in the new year. So stay tuned.
Any other thoughts on the dance? Because that is probably Hugh's best moment of the film.
Not really, apart from to say that dance is perhaps the most iconic piece of Hugh Grant's cinema out there. Maybe. I can't think of another. If you said to someone who doesn't know anything about Hugh Grant on the street, do you know, Hugh Grant, give me some feedback. Mm. And they'd be like, oh yeah, he's the guy who dances in Love Actually.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. That is very, very true. So that is the most, wow, what a moment. Mm. And to be honest, like you said, it's class. He absolutely kills it. He was really worried about not being able to dance, but like it's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
You kind of hope that maybe our prime ministers have that kind of, you know, they find a quiet moment to dance around Downing Street. That would be quite fun.
That would be beautiful. Although the idea of Boris doing that makes me physically sick. So, you know.
But you can actually imagine maybe doing it.
Definitely imagine Boris
doing
it.
Too many glasses of wine at Christmas and he's a...
Or some port or something.
I don't know what his song would be, though.
What, you know, something ploddy.
It'd probably be like some, like, Greek mythology.
You
come up with some Latin phrase book song. Something.
Oh, what a horrid... Man. Anyway,
you're turned Stormzy now, Diggs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God, yeah. ITV today misquoted him, saying that he said that Britain was 100% racist. But that's not what he said. They asked, "Is Britain racist?" He said, "Yes, 100%," which is different than being everyone there is racist. Than being like, is it? Anyway.
Anyway, let's try and keep the pod unpolitical.
Yeah. That also though, the last bit of the film when they get together. Him and Martine her real name, Natalie. when they kiss, that's hot, really hot.
Right. So not quite as secret as we'd hoped.
What do we do now?
Smile. Little bow. No way.
The problem is, though, and this is the problematic bit with this, the power play thoughts. He's the prime minister. She's a young worker. Mm. Is there a little bit of...
This is a, as we discussed before the pod, I mean, this is a bit of a theme throughout Richard Curtis's films.
Mm.
This kind of manipulation of power figures going after less powerful female figures often. Mm. I mean, yeah, there's multiple examples of it, even in this film. I mean, for the purposes of this particular love story, I can go along with it.
Yeah.
I can go along with the stupid story that the Prime Minister ends up with some girl in the dodgy end of Wandsworth.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it is, they clearly fancy the pants off each other. And when they do it all, it's all hot and it's all good fun.
I mean, the bit I don't like in the film with Natalie is that the bit when the American president comes over and starts hitting on her. And then, you don't know what's going on there. And it's just like, why is that in the film?
Yeah,
you don't need that. We just want Hugh flirting awkwardly,
yeah,
and stuttering over his chocolate biscuits and tea at the cabinet meeting.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we want.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Where are you?
Why?
You're in the North Pole!
I don't really like Christmas.
Oh, then why are you here?
We have the kiss, and then and then we have our boy. What's the kid called again?
Oh God,
the kid.
Yeah.
Anyway, the kid goes running after this
feather boy. Okay,
but that is like a continuation of this, the weird love parodies we have in this film. The two have been problematic. The one where the little kid goes after this girl he's never spoken to, and then suddenly she falls in love with him, and she's like, "Oh, of course I know who you are."
Yeah.
And then the Keira Knightley's the way that she's like stalked basically by the best friend, the best man. Is he the best man? Yeah,
he's the best man. He's the best man, and he's always there. They're all, like at the end of the film when they go to the airport, he's there with them, hanging out with them. It's like, get your own girlfriend. That is the worst thing about the entire film. This guy. Like, he's really awkward around her. Also, Andrew Lincoln, his performance in the film is weird. And the character, he's wooden. He looks smarmy and smirky. Like, the bit when he's got his, when he's showing her the cards, like, probably the most famous bit of the film. Like, he's, like, doing this,
really
this
weird,
like, smouldering face. It's so weird. And what makes it so... He, like, films her and is really... And when he films all the wedding... It's perfectly edited, by the way, and which is great. And then he, and the guy, his Bezzy mate, his face doesn't feature in it once. The back of his head does, but like he's literally completely cut him out of the whole thing. And Keira Knightley repays this freak by giving him a kiss on the lips. Her husband's, new husband's best mate, giving him a kiss on the lips. That is the, where else would you kiss him? That is the weirdest plot line, because both characters, I'm like, you're the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you kind of think that he did that to put a sort of line underneath the
plot.
Then
he says, like, then, yeah, because then and then also Andrew Lincoln's like, enough.
Yeah, because then we don't really see them after that.
No.
And then you're sort of left wondering, that's definitely not going to make him not fancy you anymore, Kira.
Yeah. Although, I mean, just him saying enough is meant to lead us to believe that. But it's like, I don't care whether you fancy each other anymore. If my best mate did that to my new wife, and then she actually, instead of going, you fucking freak, and slamming the door, she runs out after her and goes, no.
That was a nice kiss.
Thanks, man. Oscar and I just kissed.
Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. What did you think, lads? Were they taking you for granted?
Right. Well, let's ask the question. Is this film taking you for granted?
Mm.
Yes. I think... Well, think about that dance scene alone. And think about the fact that... I think this film... I watched it once and hated it back in the day. The only reason I'm watching it again is because of Hugh Grant, and the only reason I stuck around to the end. There's a huge swathe in the middle of the film where you don't see Hugh Grant for ages, and I started to get really, really tired and sad. And I kept the few times, this is bad, on Amazon Prime, you can skip forward 10 seconds. It's a few scenes where I was just skipping forward 10 seconds, because I was, especially with Colin Firth, with the young lady
That bit is awful.
That bit's rubbish. It's rubbish. And then, but like, coming and every scene with, every scene with Hugh Grant is brilliant. And I really do enjoy the Liam Neeson feather boy thing, because I think Liam Neeson's character is really sweet.
You can't not like Liam Neeson.
It's
like,
brilliant. And him playing such a loving father, great role. It's great. But sorry, back to Hugh. I think what I really like is that in an interview he said, like with Four Weddings, Richard Curtis based the character that Hugh played basically on himself. And Hugh said that he said to Richard, he was like, look, mate, I don't want to play the same character again as I did in Four Weddings and Notting Hill. I'll get crucified because I've already said that that's basically what I'm doing. And Richard said, no, this is going to be, the role is much different. It's much tougher, harder. And Hugh Grant went, okay. And then played exactly the same character again. And he was like, why have I done that? But he did. And that's what he was told. He was basically just played the same thing again. But this is the Hugh Grant we know and love.
I know. I wrote in my notes that this performance is a much more mature performance. Mm. And he looks, his hair, I like his hair now.
His hair's great.
Got rid of the bloody curtains. Mm. Looks fantastic in a suit.
Yeah.
And looks a bit more of a man of the people than he does in Four Weddings and the Funeral. I mean, he's still not a man of the people.
No.
But there's something a bit more believable about his character than what he looks like in Four Weddings.
Well, yeah. I mean, at least in this one, he's like posh and suave. He's a prime minister. Whereas in Four Weddings, he just seems like a posh knob.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so he's not a man of the people there. Yeah. But like, you're sort of, supposed to be a knob in that one. So,
But yeah, so I mean, very quickly, I just wanted to give a shout out to Bill Nighy. We haven't spoken about
Bill
Nighy makes this film complete.
10 times better.
And the bit when he's like, fuck, wank, bugger, shitting your ass head and hole is like one of my favourite moments in any film ever.
Oh, it's so good.
But back to Hugh, because we're talking about whether he's been taken for granted. I actually think that he raises the level of this film, which is a good, good indicator to say whether we've been taking him for granted. So I would say no, we haven't been taking him for granted. Mm. And I agree with you. Like, I know that obviously I'm watching this film for Hugh, but I like his character.
Mm.
His character is up there with Liam Neeson and Bill Nighy. Comes out of it with some respectability.
Yeah.
Whereas Colin Firth, Emma Thompson comes out with respectability.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of characters in this film. You're just like,
what?
Why are you even in this?
Why are you
and
in this?
And your storylines suck and you make me miserable. Suck. But Hugh, you know, I like the storyline.
Yeah.
It's funny. He's bumbling. He's awkward. He eats tea and biscuits. Fantastic. Drinks tea and biscuits.
He's handsome. He gets the girl.
Gets the girl.
Brilliant.
So
fantastic. Yeah. Well, there you go. I guess that's the Christmas episode.
It's sad. That the Christmas episode is over, but I'm glad that we got it.
Indeed.
Looking forward to we're going to be watching Spurs Chelsea later.
Yes, we are indeed. We're going to watch some football.
And the sun is the shortest day of the year. Today.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah.
So it's, what's the time now? It's 3:25, and definitely the sun is setting.
And the sun must set on this episode.
But we will be back in the new year for more.
Some fun. The Gentleman.
Indeed.
Hugh's new film. So we're jumping straight into the 21st century. We're already there, but we're jumping straight into the present day.
You know, if you want to get a review on this film, this is the place to go.
It's taking Hugh for granted, guys. We're the Hugh Grant podcast.
And if you haven't seen the film, it's been pushed out a lot. You can go and listen to Hugh Grant interviews on Heart, Version. He was on Graham Norton Show.
Great on that.
Adverts all over the place. It's got Matthew McConaughey, Hugh Grant, Henry Golding. There's a couple of others in there who are quite famous as well. So really looking forward to going to that. me and Diggory will be in the cinema.
Yes.
Wetting ourselves over Hugh.
Because he,
which is great. This is fantastic that we're going to be watching a current Hugh Grant film.
Together.
I know, it's fantastic.
How brilliant. I can't wait. All right. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks, and Merry Christmas to one and all.
Oh, oh, oh,
oh, oh, oh, oh.
Right, everyone, it's me again. Just wanted to say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and like enjoy the holidays and that. Thank you so much for like enjoying the show. You know, the boys are well happy with it and happy with the response. So thank you. You know, the best Christmas present this year to be producer Alex would be if you followed us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Sent me an email. I'm having Christmas alone this year, like last year and the one before that. So, you know, something, notifications sort of keep me going. we're at taking you on Twitter, and we're taking you for granted on Facebook and Instagram, and taking you for granted at gmail.com. Let's go for another good year. Bye.